You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Monday Show on the Everything Is Black and White podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Musgrove, alongside Aaron Stokes. And coming up on this week's episode, we look back on Newcastle United's exit from the FA Cup at the hands of Manchester City. What did you guys make of the performance? Do you accept that United were beaten but not embarrassed by arguably the best side in the world? Or did you want to see a little bit more? We talk to Sven Botman and Tino Livramento's injuries. When will it end? Bruno Guimarães' post-match comments. And what of the rest of the season? This is the Monday Show on the Everything is Black and White podcast. Hit like, subscribe, and give a rating and review. Let's get on with the show. Aaron, you well?
Very well, yeah. I think if we can just have an hour of sat here not talking about the football, that would be great. Talking about our weekends instead.
Well, we can do that. Let's update the listeners and viewers on our park run rivalry. I mean, you didn't do it this weekend. Yeah. I didn't do it this weekend. You did, however, on a lovely 12K run.
Well, this is the thing, right? Because last week we had some scandalous, some libelous, some slanderous comments thrown around the podcast studio by yourself, claiming that you were 5 minutes better off than me at the park, which we all know is nonsense. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna put them in his place this weekend, and I'm gonna go out for to be fair, I did plan to go out for a little gentle 5K, and it turned into a very lengthy, grueling 12K in the Jesmond sun.
The way you describe it to me, you sounded a bit like Forrest Gump. You got around one corner, you thought I can go a little bit further. You got around another, and you thought I can go a little bit further. I expected to see you with a big long beard.
I had that big crowd behind us following us through Jesmond Dean. No, you know what it is? I was out on a run, and I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was the sun beating down on my face. I don't know whether it was the serotonin coursing through my body or the endorphins that were released. But I got about three quarters of the way into my run, and I just thought, Newcastle are going to win this game tonight. Newcastle United, everything's going to be fine. It's going to be a great Saturday. It started perfectly. Let's end it well. And about 12 hours later, I certainly wasn't feeling those endorphins or serotonin anymore.
How are your legs the next morning?
You know what it is? Surprisingly all right. I've been trying to build up the strength and we're getting there. I was a little bit sore, but not as sore and bruised as I was watching that Newcastle match on Saturday night.
Yes, it wasn't good, was it? And we'll get into it in a moment, but just a little bit of an explanation to you guys watching. We've Switch Studios, you'll be able to see that. We've got the green screen back out behind us. It's got a lovely picture of Bruno Guimarães looking rather depressed on it. And the reason for that is because after quite a long time in the making, we're eventually going to get kind of a state-of-the-art studio, and that's going to be built over the next month or so. So that's coincided with a bit of an office move. We've moved on the corner from our old office. Same building, same floor, just around the corner of the floor. And coming with that is a brand new studio, which we're very excited about.
Very excited to be in a new setup, some comfy chairs, hopefully some new state-of-the-art equipment.
Put me Christmas list in. I'm confident it's going to get done. This wall behind you, ladies and gents, is coming down, and it's going to be a big, massive open studio lights. I have to get a bit of makeup for Aaron. It's just good times ahead.
Well, we've had, if anybody doesn't know, we had a bit of a redundancy restructure earlier this year around the company. And I suspect after Andrew's shopping list gets sent to the bosses, we might have another one because he's asked for everything for this new studio. But yeah, look, it should be good. Hopefully the viewers and listeners can benefit from it.
Yeah, well, it's only coming about because of you guys who are listening and watching week in, week out. Without you guys subscribing and liking and getting in touch with us and sharing the content, we wouldn't have the investment from the bosses above to continue this podcast. So we just want to say thank you to you guys for the support and continue to keep watching and listening and for just some more great Newcastle United content. Right, let's get into it then. Newcastle United out of the FA Cup thanks to a 2-0 defeat to Manchester City. It was as expected, Aaron.
Yeah, I think, look, as soon as the draw got made, it's no surprise to hear Eddie Howe say that he nearly swerved off the road when he listened to it live. We all knew when it was Manchester City away that this was probably going to be the most likely outcome. Doesn't make it any easier to stomach, doesn't make it any better. But we did suspect that, you know, Newcastle United would be on the end of a beating, and we'll delve into how that came about and whether they offered enough. But look, I think just to start the podcast without being too negative, this is Manchester City. This is undoubtedly the best team in world football. But it's just a shame that they didn't even have to get out of first gear to get past Newcastle on Saturday.
I agree. I think there's two trains of thought here. One, that it was Manchester City and they are the best side in the world. They dominate games, they suffocate the opposition, and they're just brilliant, aren't they? And everyone thought Newcastle United would get beat. Newcastle United did get beat. So I guess many would say, well, you can't sit here and be moaning about the performance because what you expected to happen did happen.
Yeah, I think some people will say that. I think we're going to give it a good go by the sounds of it to moan about the performance. I think there was flashes in that game on Saturday that Newcastle looked like they could maybe get something. You know, in hindsight, the two goals that they conceded were very sloppy, poor, obviously a lot of luck with two deflections taking them beyond Dubravka. But Newcastle weren't good enough in front of goal. They had a few decent half chances that they could have really got back in the game with, and they wasted them and they didn't take them. So it was a tale at two ends, really, where Manchester City got a little bit of luck. Newcastle needed it and it didn't come. But I think on the balance of it all, I think you wanted a little bit more from Newcastle and we didn't see it.
Now, the goals are conceded, they were lucky in part, I think. But if you look at it, I think you can also pinpoint.
There's two ways to look at it, isn't it? Yeah.
They were bad defensive errors, really. Yeah. Joe Willock out of position. You know, and then you've got Sven Botman for the second one, turning his back on it, really. If he stands up and gets a whack in the face, it's probably not going in the back then. So you can look at it like that you know, they've been punished for not being strong and organised, maybe they should do, but yes, the deflections are unlucky, but you know, it still had Martin Dubravka making one or two fantastic saves to keep the score respectable. So mm-hmm. You feel like, you know, City probably was still going to score, and it was because they got them two goals relatively early on in the game that they then didn't really have to step it up a gear. And that was also part of Newcastle United not pushing them. City were allowed the time and space and the relaxation of it all because Newcastle just allowed them to do it, really. And that's the kind of the second train of thought. And for you guys watching live and watching later and listening, I'd love to know your thoughts on this one. And it is the fact that Newcastle got nowhere near them. You had one real chance for Alexander Isak, great save, but it was too easy for Man City. Newcastle United never looked like pushing them to any troubles, really. And I wonder whether some fans would have preferred to have lost 3 or 4 nil, but just seeing Newcastle United push City a little bit more, because in truth, once the goals went in, City just coasted through.
Well, I think that's the big thing. I think if Newcastle had got to half time, you know, in a different world, and it'd be 0-0, the confidence grows, you know, that feeling of belief, okay, we can get something here, grows. But instead, you know, they had the wind taken out of their sails pretty early. I think it was 30 minutes when Bernardo Silva scored. You get the second goal pretty soon after that, and you think, okay, now you've still got two-thirds of the game to go and you've got an absolute mountain to climb. City, on the other hand, can think, you know, they can just completely relax. They were keeping the ball with ease. You know, they didn't need to do anything because they knew they were very, very comfortable. Now, I did think there was spells in the game after the second goal when Newcastle did put it up to City a little bit. I think the four changes that he made did temporarily change things. And I know we'll talk about them more in detail. But on the balance of play, it was, you know, they didn't really get anywhere near City. And I think one thing it just reminds everybody is that this gulf is still massive, you know, Newcastle United did.
It is, and it does. But part of me does sit here and just think it was a one-off game, 90 minutes of football, okay, potentially extra time penalties. But, you know, there was nothing to gain other than going through. You know, no goal difference. You weren't in for a point, but it felt like a league game. I know Eddie Howe has made the changes and I'm fully supportive of that because I think that was the right thing to do. But just in terms of the way they set up with the ball, without the ball, to try and go at City. It felt very much like containment, and it felt like a league game. And in that instance, when it is a one-off game, for me, that's that not the right approach.
But just to play devil's advocate, if Newcastle had gone completely gung-ho and it wasn't containment, and you know they completely tried to match City stride for stride, would we not be sitting here, or would some people not be sitting here saying, well, it was never going to work trying to go up against City like this? And when they get beat 5-0 and not 2-0, would people not be saying, you know, it was a ridiculous tactic? Eddie Howe went in that game thinking, if we can play five at the back and really counter quickly on the break with Gordon and Isak. They did try to. I know they didn't and it didn't come off, but you could definitely see in the early stages, Gordon and Isak were trying to get away and it didn't come off. I don't think either of them really did too well.
I think fans would be more forgiven if they've been, you know, pumped 3 or 4-0, but they've actually tried to attack them and tried to go at them, because it is just a one-off game. I mean, like you say, if it's the Premier League and you're getting beat 3 or 4-0 against Manchester City, that hits your goal difference, that hits your next game. But here, it is 90 minutes of football. If you do not win, you are going out of the competition. So in many ways, you've got nothing to lose by trying to be a bit more offensive, trying to attack them more, because you know City are going to have control. You know they're going to dominate you. They're going to pass it side. But they are going to pull the strings. And look, did the plan work? Five at the back? No, because Newcastle are out of the cup. And I just think, could we have just seen a little bit more? I would have taken Newcastle conceding 2 or 3 more goals if Newcastle had just been a little bit more attacking.
I don't agree with that.
But were you sitting here in Newcastle out of the cup and they've lost 2-0? What have we gained?
But they would have been out of the cup if they conceded 2 or 3 more goals.
Yeah, bro.
And losing 5-0. It would have been...
Would you not rather sit here and say, oh, we've been hit by 3 or 4 goals, but at least we did something? But you've got one moment of quality to talk about.
But Newcastle had their chances. Let's not make it out like they parked the bus for 90 minutes and didn't get out their own half. They had really decent chances that on another day, if that Isak chance goes in, they're still at the game at 2-1. If they conceded 4 or 5 to Man City, they're out the game. I completely understand why Eddie Howe set up the way he did. And also, this is Manchester City at home. They haven't lost a game, you know, at home in God knows how long. 38 games at home. This isn't a place where you can go and play gung-ho football and beat City at their own game. They're just an absolute machine. I mean, you know, it feels like they are just a complete cheat code. Newcastle were in the game for the entirety of the game, really. If Dan Bernard, but they were though, because they were with the scoreline at 2-0. If Dan Bernard taken a shot on the edge of the box, or Isak had scored that chance in the second half where he fluffed the touch, Newcastle United are still in the game. If they'd gone gung-ho and they were 4-0 down by the hour mark, they're out of the game. So, we can say City didn't get out of first gear, but Newcastle, rightly or wrongly, were still technically on paper in that game. They just didn't take their chances.
I think
when the few of them came.
Dan Burn chance kind of just sums up where Newcastle United are. You know, he's got the perfect opportunity to hit it, and he just doesn't.
It's confidence, isn't it?
Yeah. And that, for me, that's the perfect summing up of Newcastle United. They're just dead on confidence.
Yeah.
But did you not feel... It didn't feel like a cup game. It didn't.
No, it didn't. And I know I'm saying this and I'm disagreeing. I don't think Newcastle offered enough at all. I would have loved to see them really go at City more. Because teams this season, I know we've just called City, you know, a winning machine, and they're unstoppable at home, but teams have put them under real pressure this season. They were quite poor against Liverpool just a week earlier. Villa have run them very close. Wolves have had decent games against them. Teams can exploit them, and Newcastle just didn't. It didn't feel like a cup game, though. And I do get your point about Newcastle going for it, but I actually think that they set it up quite well. They just couldn't implement what they wanted to do.
I think they looked defeated before they even kicked off, in a way. I think because of the build-up, no one expected Newcastle United to get anything. Fans, pundits, it was all Man City are going to get through. And you just looked on the pitch and it was that same issue of energy, intensity. Just it wasn't there. And of course, when you're playing a team like City, you're going to get punished for it. But I don't know. I had the sense as soon as Newcastle kicked off, City were going to win. It was a foregone conclusion. And for me, Newcastle United players just didn't look. They just didn't look like they believed in themselves. And I think that's what's missing, is the belief. I think if this game would come last season, for instance.
18 months ago.
You know what I mean? You know, last season was all about a sense of belief, what we can do.
Yeah.
This season, they're looking like a team who believes they're going to get beat. I think Eddie Howe mentioned it after
the
Chelsea game about conceding goals. That's a big concern. That is a big worry. I think you can see it. They don't look confident in themselves. Do they look confident in the game plan? I'm not sure. They don't look confident like they can beat teams, especially the big teams. And last season, they had that confidence about them. And for me, right from the word go, there was only one winner here. And I think you could see that in the faces of the players.
I don't know if it was from minute one. I don't think I agree with that. But I think certainly when that first Bernardo Silva goal goes in and the way it goes in, and you think, okay, you know, this is probably game over now. I think Newcastle, to have any chance of upsetting the odds, needed to really keep that game at 0-0 for as long as possible in the second half, if not get the first goal, because otherwise, you know, the heads go down. And I think Newcastle, one of their problems on Saturday was when they did try to counter-attack and they had the ball and they had possession, I agree with you that they lacked real conviction. They didn't look like they were going to keep the ball. They looked frightened. They looked, you know, worried. They looked like they were going to lose it, and it looked like it was panicked football, whereas Manchester City regained the ball, and it's night and day. You know, Manchester City know they can keep the ball for 5 minutes, and Newcastle will not get it back. Newcastle just don't have that belief. And I think, one, it goes back to what we're saying about this season. This is a team that is dead on confidence. They can't put a run together. They're out of all the cups. They're facing a real scrap now to avoid a disaster of a season by not finishing in Europe. You've got players running on empty, players that really need a rest. You've got no real quality on the bench to bring it on. And also, you're playing against, you know, the treble winners who could go and win another treble. It all adds up to a very messy night. And I think, in hindsight, Eddie Howe will think, okay, we set up the right way, but we needed to implement it so much better than we did.
I guess the argument is that Eddie Howe can plan all week, change the formation to the right formation, I think, in the eyes of the most, five at the back. But he can only do that, and then he can only send them over the white line, then it's down to the players. And that's where something's not right, because I go back to the point, they're lacking belief, they're lacking confidence. They just didn't look like they believed themselves to win the game. And I think the most concerning aspect of the performance against Manchester City, and yes, Manchester City, the best club in the world, we get it, but it wasn't inspiring. It was not inspiring. I don't think any of those players would have gone back from the Etihad and thought, okay, you know, we were unlucky there. We put in a good shift. I'm not talking about, you know, the effort or what have you, because I'm never doubting their effort or cause to their commitment to the cause, but just in terms of walking away thinking, yeah, we give them a good game there. And when you're talking about what's left to come, 10 huge games, potential European qualification, still very much in their hands because of the teams they've got to play around them. But to get that 7th or 8th place or 6th place, you need to start winning straight away. They need to go out and beat West Ham. Yeah. And I just don't think this Man City performance was an inspiring one. It's not something that's going to light the spark for me, because you were just comfortably beaten.
Yeah.
It was a training session, I thought, for Man City. I think that's my concern going into the remaining weeks of the season.
Yeah, you know me. I'm an eternal optimist. I try and see the positive in everything. And straight after the game, I tweeted, 10 games remaining, only 2 points off 8th place, which should be enough for Europa Conference League spot. The season is not over yet, but Newcastle need to finally put together some consistent results. And some of the replies that I got were quite stark. Somebody replied, tell me honestly how many games we will win, because I can't see it being many. Work rate, confidence is gone, team full of average players. Somebody said, we're not getting Europe, don't be ridiculous. And another said, soon it'll be 7 games remaining, 5 points off a top half finish. When are we going to call a spade, our goose is cooked? Now, I don't agree that the goose is cooked, but I agree with your point that if I'm trying to see the positives, and I think Europe is still very much in Newcastle's grasp. But from what we've seen the last couple of weeks, I'm not confident that it's definitely going to happen. West Ham, as you're saying, next game is huge. They've still got to play Brighton, Tottenham and Manchester United, who are all above them. Luckily, they don't play any more teams in the top four. 4 out of their last 10 fixtures are really, really crucial. The other 6 against teams in the bottom half. So as Eddie Howe said the other night, it's nonsense that the season's over, but it doesn't fill you with confidence about the last 10 games, does it?
It doesn't. And we'll get on to a bit more about what's to come. I'm going to dive into the comments here. from you guys watching live. Hello to regular viewers, Gary, Roger, Les, Trules. Nice to see you all. Let's talk about them. We've got, let me just find a couple of comments to get started. We've got Neil saying, we don't have the strength and depth in the squad. I love Eddie, and he was brought in to save us from relegation. And he's excellent. He's been excellent beyond belief. Champions League came early, probably 3 years early. Financial fair play has been the major limiting factor in the season, and he needs to look after the young lads. Dan Byrne has been made a scapegoat by too many.
Yeah, I don't think there's much wrong with that at all.
And we've got people just talking about remaining positive. And I think that's the thing. It's the balance, isn't it? We can look at this and we can criticise, or we can try and take the positives from the performance at City, but then it is just looking ahead and remaining positive about what to come. Jordy says, don't necessarily think there's a lot wrong going forward. It's the back that's letting us down. Same old static defending every week. And we've got Billy saying, can I be a positive force in the room today? Just look at what's to come from the handful of young lads who look to be good enough by breaking into the first team. Add them in to an fit an enhanced squad at the start of next season can only bode well. My only negative is that we have to wait another season yet again. And let's talk about those subs that were made, because I think the youngsters Billy's mentioning there, referencing there, you've got Lewis Miley, Erin Anderson coming off the bench, yeah, Lewis Hall as well. And you're right, Newcastle United for what, 10 minutes or so with them changes, they looked a different team.
Yeah, they did.
There was a bit more about them, a bit more energy, and that was probably their best spell of the game. Now, going forward, do you think Eddie Howe should play them three more often than them, like the last 10 games of the season?
Look, I think there's a case to be made that all three of those youngsters need to be given more time. I think Lewis Miley, I completely understand that Eddie Howe is managing his minutes because of how much he's played. But there's a lot of head scratching the other night as to why Sean Longstaff started again after, you know, the admission that Howe made, and Miley sat on the bench again. You know, he's had this fantastic run on the team and he spent the last 3 or 4 weeks on the sidelines. Elliot Anderson looks like with each passing game he's getting fitter and fitter. And Lewis Hall, I thought, was probably the best of the four subs when he came on, I've just been writing a piece about him this afternoon, and it surprised me actually that we haven't seen him since January, the last time they played Manchester City. 2 months of no minutes at all. Now, Eddie Howe clearly doesn't think that he's, you know, at the scratch yet, but I think from the very little we've seen of him, he's looked tidy. He looks very, very good on the ball. You know, there has been some reports that maybe he isn't, you know, doing it for Howe defensively, but with the ball, he looks fantastic. His ability to get forward looks very, very good. So hopefully with 10 games left, and he's obviously going away with England, with Miley, with the youngsters for 2 games in the next couple of weeks, hopefully we see more of him. And I also actually thought Miggy, when he came on, was very good with the ball, wanted to get forward, wanted to drive with it. So that's a, you know, are we going to go back to doing the positives again? That is a positive that we saw those three come on and temporarily change the game. But I definitely think there's a case to be made that all three of them see a lot more minutes between now and mid-May.
Well, I asked people on Twitter ahead of this recording to give me one thing they'd like to see Eddie Howe do over the next 10 games. And a lot of people have come back and said it's about giving other players a chance. So the Tune Centre said, give as much time as you can to Tino, Hall, Anderson and Miley to get them even more ready for next season. Bench Longstaff and Byrne for their own good and change either a deeper 4-3-3 counter or 5-3-2 away from home, secure 7th, strengthen and go again. Jason said, for me, it would be a great time to experiment with some of the youngsters who are on the periphery of the first team. It would give them the opportunity over a 10-game period to impress for the manager to make an informed decision on their futures. So a lot of people, like some 14 says, Lewis Hall starting is a no-brainer, surely. And to be fair, there's a lot of positivity as well. People saying, look, it's still within our chance. Eric saying, I'd like to see Hall give an extended run in the team. Stacey and give Lewis Hall more of an opportunity. So a lot of Lewis Hall fans, Ginox saying play Hall, Miley, drop Longstaff and Burn. Matt saying start utilising different players instead of the same unzip performers. And Biswat saying just play the players in their correct positions, deploy even Hall a target at left back and bring Miley in midfield and keep the tactics and formation as flexible as possible in respect to the opponent's playing style. I'm sure it will bound change things positively. Now, it's an interesting point there on the formation, because we saw Eddie Howe go 5 at the back. Now, me and John Gibson were talking about this in midweek, and we both said, look, 5 at the back is what he should do, but we both said he won't do it. Eddie Howe's gone and done it. Now, do you think he will continue now to pick formations based on the teams he's facing? Or do you think he did it because Manchester City, and he's going to revert back that 4-3-3, which clearly isn't working for whatever reason, a whole host of reasons it's not working? Is he going to go back to what he knows, he's tried and tested, and just hope that eventually, at some point in the next 10 weeks, it clicks into place?
I think he's done it because it's City away, and if you're going to do it anywhere, you do it there. You could argue maybe they do it against Tottenham or Man United in the final 10 games, but I don't think we're going to be seeing them going into six games against bottom half teams.
Do you think he's going to experiment? Do you think he'll stick to that 4-3-3 then?
Yeah, but what I think we might see a lot of experimenting with is what I think it sort of baffled us last week as to why they didn't do it at Chelsea. But I think what we see a lot more of is Newcastle saying, right, let the teams have the ball and let's hit them on the counter-attack. We saw how well it worked at Wolves. When it works, it really clicks. And it's something that we haven't seen too often from a Newcastle United team under Eddie Howe, where they relinquish control, especially at home. But it really worked wonders against Wolves now. So I think that's probably a possibility that they change the in-game style. But I think as for the formation, I'd be really surprised if we saw that five at the back, you know, on a regular basis going forward.
We've got Darren says, I thought we might have gone for it against City. We've got other people BB Newcastle saying, I want Howe to prove he can take us forward by pushing to qualify for Europe. He's proven what he's capable of when he's able to play intense pressing football, yeah. But he's got no effective plan B, in his opinion, when that style isn't an option. But for that to work, because again, I thought it was quite noticeable on Saturday, they're just lacking energy. Now, we have to hope going to Dubai for the next 2 weeks, you know, a warm weather break. Eddie Howe said there'll be a bit of relaxed time, but also we're going to work them hard. We're going to analyse. We have to hope that bounce that we've seen in previous years when they have gone away under Howe, they come back and they hit the ground running. He needs that to happen for the West Ham game.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Every time they've gone to Dubai or Saudi or anything like that in the last couple of years, they've always came back looking a lot fresher, a lot happier, a lot more confident, and it's resulted in a good period of form. Now, I think it's been very telling that none of the media are out there. You know, there's even talk that even the club media aren't going to go there. Howe just wants to switch off from everything and just say it's him and the players. They're going to have downtime. They're going to have a bit of training out there to see if they can fix some of the problems, but also they're going to try and refocus and get ready for West Ham. Now, you've got to hope that that is the solution. That's what happens. That's the answer. Because, I mean, how many of those players that we see, and there's excuses for it because they're playing every week, but how often have we said in the last couple of months, even when they've been down to one or two games a week after exiting Europe, that they're looking leggy, that they're looking tired? You can't be tired in these last 10 games because, you know, it goes back to what we're saying. If they don't make Europe this season, then it's an absolute disaster.
If Newcastle United have a bad end to the season, heaven forbid, I really hope they don't. What does that then mean for Eddie Howe? Does that put him under a bit of pressure for the start of the season? I know we're looking well ahead, but I'm just trying to determine how big of a 10 weeks this really is for Eddie Howe at Newcastle United.
Oh, it's huge. And I think, look, let's just work under the assumption that Eddie Howe is given the time, even if they don't make Europe, to have a go at next season and to have a crack at it, which we think he will be. It puts them under huge pressure at the start of next season, because if they have a start of the season like they did this season, where they lost three of their first four games and they looked, you know, really, really out of sorts, you know, how much patience is left with those fans? You've got fans at the minute who are already starting to turn. I think that will only grow, you know, quite significantly.
That's his biggest threat. I mean, look, we understand that he will be in the job regardless of what happens. And really, it comes down to what happens from Saudi Arabia. They're the ones who are going to make the big decision. But I think the real danger is those, I hope I don't offend anyone by saying this, kind of the sensible, down-to-earth, kind of hot-footed reaction fans.
You would say.
Well, I don't know if many people would describe me as that, but maybe yourself. But you know, those who are kind of mellow and take everything into account.
Yeah.
And I know quite a few of them. I know people that interact with me on social media. I'd like to think my friends and family. But there's a little bit starting to turn. I think that's Eddie Howe's biggest danger.
And that's the thing at the minute. There is a growing, I won't call it a groundswell, but there's a growing feeling of unhappiness with Howe. But it's from sections of the fan base who are, you know, permanently unhappy. They'll never be happy with anyone. And, you know, that's the type of people that are calling for how to go, Mourinho to come in. As you say, when you lose the middle of the road fans like that, then I think it starts to be a problem. Now, I don't think you'll lose all of them if they don't get Europe, but I think the amount of fans that he loses the support of if they don't make Europe this season grows a lot, and that just adds to the pressure next season.
It's amazing that we're sitting here and things do feel rather down and gloomy, but it's in their hands. You know, yeah, they are still so close in the race for Europe. You beat West Ham, who are, what, two places ahead of you. Brighton's around you, then you Spurs, Manchester, you know, these sides around them. You know, it's in their hands. We just need to start seeing a bit of consistency, and performance against Wolves is the bar. Can you write off Chelsea in the Manchester City performance? I don't know, but you know, it's there, and you have to actually praise the players and the staff for a fantastic job in one sense, given the injuries that they've had, that they're still within the shout of Europe. But then that's got to be the inspiration and motivation to actually, do you know what? We've come through some pretty choppy waters. Look where we are. We're getting players back. We're playing one game a week now. Let's get it. Let's do it.
You know what it is? You saying that, I feel like I've just rewound the clock back 2 months when they got knocked out of everything. We said, oh, well, look, players are coming back and Isak's coming back and they're down to a game a week, and we're still sat here 2 months later having the same problems. Now, look, they're 10th in the table. They're on 40 points. Wolves, a point ahead of them in 9th. Brighton, 2 points ahead of them in 8th. West Ham, 4 points ahead of them in 7th. They're only 7 points off Manchester United as well in 6th. And they still have to play them. They've got the best goal difference of any of those teams by quite a lot, to be fair. They've got 11 positive. The closest to them is Brighton on 6. So it is in their hands, as we talked about, favourable fixtures.
This Dubai trip's going to be the kickstart, right? Isn't it? Come on!
I'm just having deja vu because how many times have we sat here after a win and said Newcastle are back? And look, you've got to hope. So there's no excuses from here. They're going to get players back. Hopefully, Nick Pope by the end of the month. They're hoping Joe Linton by the end of the season for the last couple of games. There's no excuses to not make from here. But as we said about 20 minutes ago, watching Chelsea last week and watching Manchester City on Saturday, it just doesn't fill you with any.
Yeah, hope. I think that's what I'm missing is the confidence. Look, I'm clinging to everything I can hold on to, that the bounce, like I say, when they do tend to go abroad for a training camp, they come back and they look like a better side. Although looking outside the window right now,
they're saving the money and staying in Newcastle.
They save themselves a few grand, but it would be a lot easier to fully commit to that belief they can get 7th or above if the performances were there. If we were saying they got beat off Chelsea, but they were unfortunate. If we were saying they got beat off Man City, but they give them a go. Really, the only good performance of late has been that game against Wolves. They were shocking against Blackburn. Weren't very good in the games in and around the games that we've spoken about, Chelsea, Man City. Other than Wolves, is that performance enough for you to say they can do it?
No, not on its own. I think what I'm going off is we know when this team's clicking, they can put together real runs. They did it when they stormed away from relegation and how they did it for long periods last season where they just looked absolutely unbeatable for weeks on end. They need to pull one of those out the bag again. Now, they've done it before 2 or 3 times. I think they'll do it again. The only thing that's concerning me, and I had a lot of replies to that tweet I just mentioned before, saying, you know, they haven't put together a consistent run all season. When they beat Sunderland and beat Aston Villa at the start of January, we thought, okay, this is the start. It wasn't. They then beat Forest. It wasn't. You know, there's all these false dawns that we keep talking about. Wolves was another one. They need to go out and beat West Ham comfortably, convincingly, and then they need to back that up for weeks on end. But yeah, look, as I said, I'm positive. I'm optimistic. I think Newcastle will do it. But is that just because I've got the black and white tinted spectacles on? I'm not sure.
Well, fingers crossed they can do it. If you're watching live, get in the comments, let us know where you think Newcastle are going to finish this season. Can they qualify for you? I'd love a little trip to some far-flung destination in the Conference
League. Honestly, give me, and I would have taken this last season, give me the Europa Conference League any day.
And it's interesting because Pep Guardiola kind of referenced Newcastle playing week in, week out the first time it's happened and getting used to it. I mean, the Conference League would allow them to get used to it you know, and then hopefully the season after qualify for the Champions League. And I know some people are saying, oh, we don't want to go anywhere near that competition.
Oh, I would love it.
If the main aim season after next and the season after that is Champions League qualification and then doing well in the Champions League, and to be fair, they didn't do too bad this season, had some good results, and unfortunate, you need to get used to playing week in, week out. And the Conference League gives you that travel, gives you those games midweek, and then gives you that quick turnaround for the league games. And it's a perfect preparation and to help you build into this elite side like a Man City. So yeah, Conference League for me, I would take that. So fingers crossed they can get there. We've got John saying, I thought we looked better when Hall came on at left back, like the midfield three of Miley, Bruno and Anderson. There's energy, passing, and people prepared to put a foot in. I honestly think Cher and Botman need to be taken out. I think they're struggling physically and mentally. It may be Tino, Lascelles, Byrne and Lewis Hall at the back. Thoughts on that?
A rogue shout. I think that's the first time I've heard, you know, people calling for both the centre-backs to be dropped. I think that there's definitely question marks around Botman and whether he needs to spell out the team or whether they're going to try and soldier on for the next 10 games. I mean, look, he came off on Saturday and looked, you know, in a little bit of discomfort. I know he jumped off the pitch. Look, I'm not sure about that. Lascelles and Byrne at centre-back. But
I would like to see Byrne given a run at centre-back because I think we would see him perform better.
Yeah.
At this moment in time, the opposition sides are just consistently targeting that flank.
I would agree with that. And I think it does free up then the option to give Lewis Hall a run. You get Matt Target in there. You even start Tino there potentially if Trippier's back. Fabian Cher, though, I don't think Fabian Cher's at the stage where we need to be talking about dropping him. I think, yes, he's not been at his levels, but I don't think he hasn't been droppable bad, has he? He hasn't been Botman bad the last couple of weeks.
No, Botman's been the worst of the two, but sometimes I look at Cher, I just think when things aren't going well, yeah, has he got that leadership that you want in the trenches when you really need someone to lift you out? And while he's a better centre-back than Lascelles, Lascelles has that. And again, every week I'm mentioning the reaction when Newcastle are conceding goals, and only Lascelles on that first goal yesterday was clapping his hands in a way of saying, come on, let's get back together, because no one else was doing it. That's what they've missed over the last few weeks, is that someone just to, like I said, just to grab the rest of the team and say, come on, let's do this. He's a proper captain and a proper leader. And maybe, you know, why not play Byrne and Lascelles at centre-back potentially?
You're a bolder man than me. I'm not too sure. Look, I mean, given how the season's gone with injuries, we may very well see that between now and the end of the season. I'm not sure if I'm at that stage though.
Botman though comes off injured. What are our thoughts on that? He's not going to be playing any international football, so back for West Ham, do we even think that might be a little bit too soon?
Look, I mean, we'd have to hope so. You know, there wasn't a diagnosis over the weekend for Botman. I'm assuming they're going to assess it out there. The fact that it was looked like a knee problem is concerning given his issues earlier this season. He's not looking right, is he? He hasn't looked right for weeks. I don't think he's looked right really since he came back, which is a real shame. And part of me thinks, you know, you've got to look again at the fact that he played through that ACL injury at the very start and they didn't diagnose it, and you know, how much damage has that done to him? And it's a shame really, because this is the first time I really talked about Sven Botman in this way. He's been absolutely rock solid for, you know, a good 18 months before the injury. He just doesn't look the same player, and I'm wondering whether, you know, if he does have to sit out another few weeks, that isn't maybe the worst thing in the world.
And maybe it's one of those where you just sit him out for the rest of the season.
Well, look, Eddie Howe took him out the firing line, didn't he, the other week, and said, look, he needs a week out. He dropped him at Blackburn. And with Lascelles in there and Byrne being able to play there and Kraft coming back in.
He's got options now,
which he didn't have a couple of months ago, which is good.
He's got options, and you just think, look, 10 games to go, yes, there's a lot of play for, and yes, you've got defenders who wanted Sven Botman's level, but the form Sven Botman's in at the moment, yeah, they're probably better than Sven Botman. And just let him have 3 or 4 months off and be ready for pre-season, then just gradually get him back in. Because you do worry that if that ACL isn't 100% healed, even if it's 95%, what is the point of risking someone who has got the potential to be one of the best centre-backs the Premier League's ever seen in the years to come, what's the point of risking them? Because you could just do more long-term damage. Sit them out until the start of next season.
And there's an argument as well that if he has picked up another knee problem now, you say, right, we're gonna get him under the knife, we're going to get him operated on, we're going to fix whatever has been plaguing him properly, and he's going to be out for 3 months, but it doesn't matter because we know when he comes back, he's going to be fighting fit. There's talk that they're going to do that with Isak over the summer and get him under the knife for a groin injury that's been keeping him out 3 or 4 times this season. Maybe. I think one thing it does underline, and I know we talk about it every week, but ahead of the summer, you've got to bring another centre-back for me. You've got to raise the quality so that when Botman's share do inevitably have spells out the team, and look, this is no slight on Byrne and Lascelles, but for a team that has ambitions of qualifying for the Champions League or the Europa League every year, they need another centre-back of Botman's quality to be able to push the others and raise the level, definitely.
Well, we've got a question here from Jordy Too Good. And they say, looking ahead to the summer, what positions or targets do you think are the priority? Personally, he would like to see Rafinha on that right wing if it was possible. I think they probably do need someone who can play on the wing, and improvement on Jacob Murphy. I thought it's done not too shabby over recent weeks. He's a man who loves to get the ball in the box, and that's what Newcastle United have been missing. He's not shy of a cross or two. But I think an upgrade on both him and Miguel Amiron is needed. Don't think the right wing's probably the number one priority for me. It's got to be a striker. You knew I was going to say it. It's got to be a striker. You're talking about Alexander Isak potentially going under the knife. You're just checking how long.
Just checking how long it'd take.
Yeah, well, 40 minutes, yeah. Not bad. You're talking about Alexander Isak operation. Callum Wilson. Goodness knows what the future holds for him. They need a top class striker to come in. I think is the number one priority for me. I think a number six, despite any how his protests, it's not a priority. I think it is. I think they need someone who can allow.
Really?
Yeah, I still think so. I think you need someone, a little ankle biter.
But then, if they bring in a number six, do they need to get rid of some midfielders? Surely, because that's a stacked midfield.
You could potentially send, Anderson or O'Malley out on loan to make sure they get first team football. Hey, high flying championship side for a season. 17-year-old kid. I mean, look how Matty Longstaff burst onto the scene. And now he's over in Toronto. I know he had a bad injury, but this is the point. Let's be quite frank. Even if they didn't go out and sign a number six, Joe Linton and Tonali coming back, you're still behind. You still got Anderson and Miley potentially behind Longstaff, Bruno.
Well, this is what I mean. If they then sign a number six in the summer, that midfield becomes very, very, very bad.
I think Longstaff's probably the one most expendable there out of all the midfields that they've got. But I do think I'd like to see number six. And yeah, I wouldn't be against sending Miley out on loan to a first team, a championship side or a lower Premier League side with guaranteed first team football. Get that written in the contract. He needs to play X amount of minutes, because I think you'd benefit from that. If you can't guarantee him a starting place next season, which he's not going to get one. He's not even guaranteed one now because of the return of Joe Willock. So yeah. Bring a new midfielder in and send one of the youngsters out on loan, potentially get rid of Longstaff.
Was that your priority, number six or a right winger?
No, it's a striker for me.
A striker for me
is the priority. I can understand the centre-back argument. I still wouldn't be against a left-back coming in, a world-class left-back.
I think a left-back's got to be very, very high on the list. Like, top for me, probably. No, we'll go second because I would really like a real good upgrade at right midfield. I think they need a winger. I think they've been crying out for one since the takeover. You've seen what they did on the other flank with Anthony Gordon, and now they've obviously got Barnes and behind them. I think for me, it's a right winger. I think second, it's a left back. And I think third, it is a centre back.
You will do anything.
Fourth is a striker. If Callum Wilson goes, then I think the striker jumps up significantly to the top two. And then I think fifth on my list is a centre midfielder. Sixth is a goalkeeper. And seventh is a couple of really good wonder kids who we can just.
We've got Minter coming back. Could he potentially be the upgrade on the wing?
Potentially, yeah. Look, he's had a really hit and miss spell in Holland, and at the start of the season, he was really struggling to get game time. He was really struggling with criticism in the press. Really seems to have turned a corner since the African Cup Nations. He's playing regularly, he's scoring. He's got a great assist the other day. Feyenoord are trying to keep him next season, which I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. So yeah, look, potentially I think Eddie Howe will definitely want to have a look at him over the summer. Is he ready yet to be an upgrade at right midfield? No, but I think he's doing no wrong at a decent level. He could easily come and be a squad player. They need a real world-class right midfielder and a world-class left-back for me. That's the two they need.
Sudak says, lol, listening as you list a shopping list like fantasy football, we'd be lucky to get two
yeah,
in the
sorry,
summer.
Can I just say, when I know I've just reeled off seven positions that I want, but that was just my order. I don't think Newcastle are going to get seven. I think if we limit it to two or three, I think we need right midfield, left-back, centre-back.
Okay, we've got Roger saying top priority for me is a striker that has not got a dodgy injury record. A lot of people agreeing with the suggestion that maybe Sven Botman could be rested now and saved for the rest of the season. And we've mentioned there Sean Longstaff. Time to take him out of the team for West Ham and beyond. I mean, Eddie Howe said he's been playing with injections and what have you. He didn't have the options to rest him. He had the options on Saturday, didn't rest him, taking him off. I think it was about an hour mark by the time he reached 10 mentions on Guy Mowbray's commentary on West Ham, because he was just not in the game. Cast didn't lose because of him. But point being, he's had a pretty poor 6 weeks, you would argue. Is it now time? He's been even longer.
And the rest.
Now time to give Mailo Anderson the chance to show why they could be ahead of Longstaff?
Yeah, I think so. As you say, I think, look, for how good he was last season, it's been a real drop-off. And even before Eddie Howe, you know, came out and said that last week, you had a feeling that Longstaff had been playing through something. He obviously came back very soon from a foot injury at the start of the season, and you always wondered whether that was still plaguing him. Surprised that he hasn't been given a rest the last couple of weeks. He continues to play. I know he didn't play 90 at the weekend, but he's played 90 minutes after 90 minutes after 90 minutes. You've got options there ready. Whether Anderson's fit or not, we don't know. To play 90 minutes, Lewis Miley certainly is. Get him back in the team ASAP, definitely.
And the other question I want to ask you was, obviously, they played five at the back. Jacob Murphy was the wing back that started. Didn't do it too bad of a job. But when you've got Emil Kraft on there, why not use Emil Kraft instead of Jacob Murphy?
Is that too defensive, at least with Murphy? Do you know you're going to get someone up the pitch? And look, I'm not saying Kraft wouldn't have been a good option, but I think at least you know with Murphy, as we've already touched on, he's going to offer you a lot. He offered a few decent balls at the box the other day, as he has done for the last couple of weeks. I think he was the smart option. There was a couple of times defensively where he looked a little bit out of position, and Lascelles kept having to marshal him back into where he should have been. But I think with what Newcastle were trying to do, having him at right back, knowing what he can do going forward, I wasn't against that at all.
Just breaking now, Nottingham Forest have been docked 4 points for breaching Premier League profit and sustainability rules. Wow, so that's a big bit of breaking news. Does that punishment for Nottingham Forest just justify Newcastle's approach in the January market and what we're likely to see coming in the summer as well?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, everybody is cursed FFP or PSR, whatever acronym you want to use this week. But, you know, the facts are Premier League clubs have been caught out with this significantly. Whether it's right or wrong to fine clubs and punish them mid-season when there's still appeals going on, and what they've done with Everton is quite frankly ridiculous. But taking that all away from it, in our personal opinion, the facts are, you know, Newcastle could quite easily, given their big influx of money and lack of sponsorship deals from the Mike Ashley era, being caught out with this and overspending. And look, if they had been, then we'd probably be waving goodbye to Europe now. So, yes, it's frustrating that they haven't been able to spend it. We know that new rules are going to come in from next season, which are going to, you know, potentially loosen the purse strings a little bit when it goes closer to your UEFA's model. But, you know, look, it's absolutely obvious now with clubs getting penalised why Newcastle have been so strict with it.
I think the comment there in the comments about the wishful shopping list goes back to...
Which I wasn't saying, by the way.
Goes back to what Newcastle can actually do in the summer. Yeah. You know, we expect them to have, you know, a little bit of movement, but does it come with the caveat of having to sell a top-class player?
Yeah, look, I don't think that's changed. I think if a big offer comes in for a decent player, I think they'll be a lot more inclined to do business than they would have been 2 years ago, because they know they need it. You know, they haven't sold a big player, really, other than Alisson Maximum, which they didn't get fair market value for me.
It stinks, doesn't it, as well? I mean, I feel sorry for Aston Villa as well. They're going to likely have to sell a top class player to you know, hit these rules.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they're doing well. They're going to qualify for the Champions League. And in many ways, you know, being successful sounds like a bit of a punishment. I know they spent a little bit of money, but they haven't spent, you know, carelessly. And then and then being forced to sell a top class player, probably to a rival, one of the three teams that will finish above them. It's just unfair.
Well, we talked about City and how magnificent they are, and FFP was brought in really to stop City and Chelsea happening again. But actually, I think it's gone the other way in the sense that it's pretty much a closed shop now.
If you're at the top, place, isn't it?
You're at the top to stay there, and clubs like Newcastle and Villa and Wolves and Brighton, who are trying to punch above their weight in the Premier League, are being punished for it now. Hopefully, as we say, in the summer when these new rules come in, the cost and the revenue rules come in, Newcastle will see a bit more. They're going to see, obviously, sponsorship deals active from the summer. They're going to have that Champions League money in the next year's accounts as well. They're going to have a lot more wiggle room. But look, whether it'll be enough to keep every single player at the team, I don't know. And look, if they don't get Europe, I hate to say it, there's nothing to suggest that one of the big players says, this offer's came in, I want to go.
Well, on to the big player that you might be alluding to but haven't named, Mr. Bruno Guimarães. He tweeted after the game against Manchester City and said, struggling to find words now, disappointed to not go through in the FA Cup. We still have 10 games in the Premier League to save our season. We count on our fans as always. And it's the words save our season, which have got quite a few people's backs up.
Yeah.
Now, is that just like you and I saying 10 games, everything to play for, getting to Europe, and it's not been a bad season, don't get into Europe, it's been a bit of a disappointment? Or, as some people have done, is that Bruno saying, you better get me first to European football or I'm heading down the road?
Look, I mean, I think I used the same phrase, save our season, in a headline over the weekend. So maybe, look, it is the truth. You know, they do generally have to save the season in the next 10 games. But when you hear it from a player who...
Because that
is likely happen, is likely to have a lot of offers in the summer, you know, if Newcastle make Europe or not, then look, it's difficult with Bruno, isn't it? Because he's clearly very settled at the club. He signed a new contract. He's on a lot of money. He clearly loves Newcastle. I don't think there's any denying that. But this is a footballer who, in his very first interview, while Newcastle United were 19th in the Premier League or 18th in the Premier League, said, "I want to play in the Champions League and win the Champions League." This is not a player who wants to be finishing 9th or 10th in the Premier League. And if Manchester City, who clearly like him, if PSG, if Real Madrid, if Barcelona come knocking, is that love for Newcastle and the project and Eddie Howe and the fans enough to keep him? I'm not sure.
And Pep continually talking about him doesn't help things at all. But it was interesting, you watched the Man City game and Guy Mowbray on commentary pointing out that it was Danny Murphy actually pointing out, everyone's favourite pundit, talking about the difference between Rodri and Bruno Guimarães. You know, we all see Bruno as this fantastic player, probably the best player Newcastle United have got, but then they go up against someone like Rodri and it's just different levels. Do you agree with that analysis?
Yeah, and look, this is no slight on Bruno. I absolutely love him. Everybody loves him. There's a good reason he is one of Newcastle United's best, but it goes back to the Gulf. You are playing against a defensive midfielder who is probably the best holding midfielder in world football. I mean, what's the stat now? I don't think he's lost a game for City in something like 370 days. He is an absolute machine of a footballer. He's brilliant. He reminds me so much of Busquets in the sense that he was just so calm on the ball. He's had a goal to his game this season. Look at the likes of Matias Nunes, Calvin Phillips, good players who Manchester City spent a lot of money on, and they cannot get anywhere near this team because you've got Kovacic, Rodri, De Bruyne, who didn't even play on Saturday, it didn't matter. This Manchester City team is just an absolute joke, really. And when, you know, we've spoken about Newcastle subs coming off the bench and doing well, but these are young kids and academy projects and everything. Manchester City can turn to Grealish and on the bench, it's just a completely different playing field, isn't it?
A lot of people are clinging to hope, though, that Bruno can look around and say, right, look what we did last season with a full roster of the squad,
yeah,
top four football, qualify for the Champions League this year. We've had injury after injury. We've had a ban to Denali who'd be lined up alongside of me.
Yeah.
That he will look upon what's happened this season and go, okay, this isn't the real Newcastle. Next season, we can have another go. I'll stay because we've been unlucky. But yeah. Do you buy that? Do you subscribe to that?
Yeah, to a degree, yes. And I don't think it's going to be this thing that Newcastle suddenly miss out on Europe one season and you're going to have Isak and Botman and Bruno all leaving. I think, you know, football's not like Football Manager, isn't it? As somebody's just pointing out to me in the comments, you know, I think they will give it a go and stick it out. But I think, you know, should that become two seasons without Europe, or dare I say three seasons without Europe, suddenly then you can't attract these players in the first place, because someone like Sandro Tonali, a player of that quality from Europe, is going to be going, well, hang on, this is a Newcastle United who have got all this money, but they can't finish in the top seven. Why am I going to go there realistically?
Well, I guess the same question applies to the ownership as well, because when the chairman came over and did the interview and he said, I want to be number one, they're far from that. Let's be fair, though, you know, two quarterfinals, Champions League, beating the likes of PSG. But
yeah, because look, if I'm Yasser Al-Rumayyan and I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, well,
that's not number one.
What's that? Champions League group stage exit and two quarterfinals. But
my point being, like, does he look at this season and think, okay, they've been really unlucky with injuries,
yeah.
And that gives Howe a little bit of time. We're not going to get rid of Eddie Howe because he's not qualified for Europe.
Look, if this had been a season where they didn't have any injury problems, they lost 6 out of 6 games in the Champions League, they, you know, got beat off Sunderland, they didn't get through to the quarterfinals against City, and they were still 10th in the league, we'd all be sat here saying very different. We know the injuries. We know that they've actually been very unlucky with the cup draws, the Champions League, to give it a good go. But if this next season, and they don't have these excuses and they're still doing the same, I think how it goes, I think you lose some big players and you can't attract them. I know this is all of a sudden doom and gloom, but that's the reality and that's the pressure that Newcastle are under now. They've achieved so much last season. They've got all this backing behind them. The eyes of the world are on them. The owners are absolutely ruthless. You need to get it right.
Fingers crossed they can do. Celiac says, who says we don't make Europe? 2 home games, 6 points will look a lot different. Well, fingers crossed they can beat West Ham and Everton. 2 big games coming up on the horizon. The end of this month and start of next month. Right, time for some trivia.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Alexander Isak, what number does he wear?
Number 14.
So I want you all the way back to the year that I was born, 1991, 1992, to name those who've worn the number 14 shirt. Oof. Some good players in here.
Can I just ask, while I buy myself some thinking time? There's usually sort of a theme on the trivia every week. What was the reason for this question?
Because everyone talking about that one chance. I should have scored. And that was just that sprung into my mind. And if you guys have enjoyed the trivia, I'm actually going to cut up all the trivia that we've done over the last year or so, piece it together. That'll be a special episode during this international break, which you can, you know, listen to and get your pen and paper out and see if you can do better than Aaron, which quite frankly isn't really that hard to do. But
well,
come on.
I tell you what, I'm struggling here, but I'll go for a couple that came to my head straight away. We'll start with David Ginola,
yeah.
We'll go for Charles Nzogbia, wore it, didn't he? Or was
Charles,
that 16?
No. Yeah, Charles Nzogbia, 04, 05 to 08, 09. Do you want some help?
Yeah, give me a couple of clues.
This man
actually,
is...
Actually, no, hang on.
I'll give you a couple of clues for the older ones.
Yeah, okay. I think Jack Colback wore 14.
Yeah, he did. This man was the original over the wall. Forget Trippier. Forget... Ryan Taylor, this man was the original one of the wall. Now a taxi driver in his native Dublin.
Don't know. We've had
a namesake as well. Someone else played centre back with his surname. Liam O'Brien.
Oh, poor sorry.
Then we had the killer the season after.
Kilcline.
Brian Kilcline. Then we had, we had Alex Matthew. And then we had David Ginola. Then the man who replaced David Ginola wearing number 14 didn't seem to be a big fan of advertising hoardings.
Tomu Katsubaya.
Then we had a left back who Newcastle signed from Sheffield United. The same surname as a prolific striker in the late 80s, early 90s at Newcastle, wore the number 9 shirt. First name is the surname of a certain superhero who dresses in black. There's a lot of clues going on.
Yeah, no.
Wayne Quinn.
Yeah, no, you threw me off of those clips.
Then we've got a brother, two brothers played for Newcastle United in defence, Scotsman.
Oh, Caldwell.
Which one?
Gary.
Gary, yeah. And then we have South American midfielder, who wasn't too bad, actually. Wasn't too bad at all. First name, the same name as one of the finest ever players to ever play the beautiful game.
Gavilan.
Gavilan, look at that. Then we
had Acuna, but then I went for Gavilan.
Then we had a former Leeds United striker who came in on loan. Not from Leeds United, I don't think. Well, it might have been from Leeds United. Played for, I'm pretty sure he played for Sunderland as well. He did play for Sunderland, then he moved to Leeds. Then he had a horrendous injury.
No.
Newcastle United have got five of these on the key side. That is the greatest team you'll ever get.
Bridge, sorry.
Michael Bridges.
Yeah, sorry.
There we go. Charles Nzogbia, a left back who played for Chelsea, came on loan.
Van Aanholt.
And then Mr. Versatile.
Anita?
No, no. Centre mid, left back, right back, centre back, former Wigan man. You're on the edge of the seat, you might say you're.
What?
Or if you knock someone up, you knock when someone passes away, you say you've knocked them off there. There we go. French striker who.
I knew this one, like Remy.
Right. And then a winger signed from Manchester United.
Obata.
And then a man who hit the headlines over the weekend for laying into Sunderland.
Good old Isaac Hayden.
There we go, ladies and gents. The players to have worn number 14 shirt at Newcastle United. This has been the Everything Is Black and White podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed the show. Please leave us a rating and review. Please hit like and subscribe on YouTube. Head over to chroniclelive.co.uk for all the latest Newcastle United news. And for myself and Aaron, we'll see you guys next week. And you're going to want to tune in because it's going to be a very special episode of the Monday show. It's not going to be the usual show, the usual kind of Q&A. It's going to be pre-record. But you guys are going to want to watch because I tell you what, a ton of research has gone into this episode. It's
so much research.
We're building this up, but we're very excited about it. This has been like 2.5 months in the works, right? This episode, it's going to be worth the wait. You guys are going to want to tune in. You're going to want to get involved. Watch out for it next Monday. Very special episode of the Monday show. But until then, stay tuned this week for plenty of great Newcastle United content coming up on YouTube and the podcast channel for myself, John Gibson, Lee Ryder, Sam as well. We'll be back with a new episode of Get in the Bin. Plenty to come. It's been a pleasure. I'll see you guys next week.